This place is so special to me and to the Butterworth family. Right before you arrived for this conference, there was another function here called the Associates Weekend. I don't know if any of you were a part of that or not, but there was a moment in the weekend where I was invited to come up and kind of talk about what Mount Hermon really means to me, and I can't just tell a regular story. I got to turn it into a, you know, 4-point outline with a poem and an offering at the end. As I thought about Mount Hermon, I thought about four very specific spots here at Mount Hermon that have real significance to me. And the first one's right here, the auditorium, because maybe unlike some of you, my first visit to Mount Hermon was actually as a speaker. I came on the coattails of Chuck Swindoll at one of the Insight for Living weeks, and I knew from the start that this, and I don't mean to cast an idol about a place or another, but this, I'm standing in a place of honor. I mean, to think of all the men and women of God that have stood here before me and have taught the Word of God, this is not some slouch gig. This is a place of honor, and I knew that from the very first time that I was here. And then I visually, we didn't get up, but I visually walked everybody down to the creek, because I believe my first summer here was 30 summers ago, and my kids were much smaller, and there weren't as many bells and whistles. There weren't ropes and canopies and machetes and chainsaws like there are now for our kids to play with. The Swindolls tipped us off. They said, pack really old, scuzzy shoes for your kids that they'll never use again and go down and take a creek walk. And I'll never forget that first creek walk because our family had so much fun. Because, again, I'm Philadelphia boy. I mean, there's not a lot of creeks in Center City, Philadelphia that are available to walk in. And so it was a whole new experience for all of us, and it was just, we got so tickled with one another that if you ever laugh so hard, you just lose your strength. I mean, so the current is just moving us along, and here's children and adults of all ages just, you know, drowning in the creek, in that horrific current and that 4 inches of water. We're dying, but we're laughing so hard we can't contain ourselves. It's definitely a place of happiness. And then I walked everybody up to the chapel, which was a real place of healing for me, where I sat in that chapel by myself one Friday afternoon as a single dad. And I had been single again for 6, probably close to 7 years at that point. And that's how long it took for me to finally figure out what the spiritual lesson might be in all this. And I remember in that chapel saying to God, okay, God, I think I've got it. If you want me to be single the rest of my life, I'm willing to do that. You are all I need. And that was a very big moment in my life, a real moment of healing. So often happens, not all the time, but so often, it's almost like God just needed that surrender, and then only a matter of a few months later, I met Kathy, and we are going to celebrate our 14th wedding anniversary here in just a couple of weeks, so God has been so wonderful to bless us. And then the last spot I walked everybody was Victory Circle, because that's such a place of hope. And the future is bright, and I love this place, and I love, you know, there's nothing magic about this place, there's nothing magic about any of those four geographical positions, but when I think of Mount Hermon, I think of honor and happiness and healing and hope, and I hope you feel the same, and you've made me feel that way this week. You've been delightful in your response, and the only people I can think of in this room that even get more kudos are the brave ones that came to my workshop, and you have encouraged me in such a way, you'll never know how much you encourage me with your stories and your diligence to put some stories on paper, and that's a brave and courageous thing, and I just am so grateful for your involvement. So let me take a few minutes, and they're going to give me a little bit more than I've had the rest of the week to develop one more theme with you that I think is very much in conjunction with creating a legacy. And so let me start out by just offering one word for you and see what you think. What do you think about when you think of the word unforgettable? The Nat King Cole song? Yeah, okay. How about, we're getting towards the end of summer, how about unforgettable summer events? You know, lots of stuff happens in the summertime. I am especially blessed because my birthday is in the summertime. And my mother, whether she meant to or not, created a legacy surrounding my birthday. My birthday is the 5th of July. And growing up in Philadelphia, my strongest memory of celebrating my birthday as a child is that my mother would provide for me a day-old 4th of July birthday cake in the shape of an American flag, like a sheet cake. And there were only 4 of us. And I remember as I would eat through that cake, getting to the end, towards the end of my birthday, thinking, wow, this is really special. Who else gets a day-old birthday cake in the shape of an American flag here in the middle of Philadelphia? So, I mean, that was a very, very special memory for me. Mom was the kind of person that didn't say I loved you. She demonstrated love by saying, here, eat more potatoes. And so I knew, especially on my birthday, that I was a very loved child because this sheet cake would feed 80 people, and here I was polishing it off. So anyway, for some of us, we got our first job in the summer, and there was the real unforgettable idea of getting your first paycheck and how great that was. Summer vacations. What great experiences. Throw everybody in the vehicle and go somewhere. You know, the big trip and you're in Philadelphia. Throw everybody and we'll go to Florida. Let's go to Florida for a vacation. Now, you'll notice I said vehicle because this is fun. I love to do this with groups. Depending on how old you are, the vehicle changes as you think about all of this. I mean, our kids, they talk about throw the kids in the SUV and we'll go on our vacation. Or maybe you're a little older, throw them in the minivan and we'll go on vacation. Or maybe even the big boy, throw them in the van and we'll go for vacation. But I got my people here. I'm talking about throw them in the station wagon. All right. If you wandered in today and you don't know what that is, ask your grandparents. But visually, just think of an aircraft carrier with wood paneled sides, okay? And the wood paneling is truly contact paper, but nonetheless, that's a station wagon. Well, there's a lot of great unforgettable events in the summer, and one last one, that unforgettable summer romance. Remember? She was 11, you were 8. She was easy, a foot and a half taller than you, but it was love. It was puppy love, but it was real to the puppy. What a great time. Unforgettable events. Okay, let me shift it a little bit more towards where I want to go this morning. How about unforgettable people? Who are the unforgettable people in your life? Now, really, I could end right there. You get the connection with legacy right at that point, right? Legacy is what outlives you. And the fact that some of the unforgettable people in my life, probably like the unforgettable people in your life, aren't even living anymore. They have passed away, but they are unforgettable. That legacy lives on. I mean, you can pick the usual suspects out of the usual groups. I know in my life, the most unforgettable person in my life, earliest in my life, was a school teacher. And all of you who are teachers or who are related to teachers, bless you. In elementary school, this dear teacher was the first person who ever communicated to me that I had gifts and that there might be something that I might be able to contribute. You know, I've talked forever and ever about I was the little fat kid and everybody teased me and everybody made fun of me and I had zero self-esteem. And I just, you know, and I'm not unusual because kids pick at every kid. Too fat, too thin, too tall, too short, feet too big, teeth look funny, ears look funny. I mean, this is just, they're equal opportunity hecklers, all right? And yet some are strong enough to deal with it, others just get crushed by it. And I remember it wasn't until this elementary school teacher just really believed in me. A Christian school teacher in a Philadelphia public school, back old enough in the days where she could read her Bible every morning and to us and say the Lord's Prayer before we started our class. Man, that sounds like I grew up on Mars, doesn't it? She believed in me, okay? School teachers. For some of us in Philly, if you're a boy in Philly, your manhood was on the line if you did not participate in some sort of athletic endeavor. So a second group from the usual suspects is coaches. Many of us think of an unforgettable person in my life that was a coach. I got into junior high and high school, and this coach took me aside, and because I was so overweight, you know, he said, well, look, you know, how about coming out for the track team, which I thought was a joke. It's like, okay, now, you know, kids make fun of me. Teachers are inviting me to stay after class, you know, for kind of personal heckling. And he said, well, no, it's track and field. There's weight man events. Look at you, Butterworth, weight man events. There's the shot put, the ball, you don't throw it, you put it. And the discus, you know, you've seen the famous statue, the discus thrower, and apparently my face went ash. He goes, relax, relax. They wear clothes now when they throw this thing. And he said, you know, with your weight, you could send that thing into orbit. And so I joined the track team. And I'll never forget that coach, because he would say to me every day, look, Butterworth, I can't ever guarantee you'll win a medal. But if you come to practice every day and you work hard, you will get better. And the work ethic that he instilled is unforgettable in my mind. And then how about pastors? Many of us feel like some of the most unforgettable people in our lives are the pastors in our lives. A youth pastor who got a hold of me in high school and said, you know what? I think God has something special for you. And then he said, well, would you be willing to go with the group to a Christian conference, a high school camp? And that was the story I told you earlier in the week about. It was between going to Bible camp or Woodstock. And thank God I made the right decision, because Woodstock's on tape. You know, I would have missed the whole Bible camp thing, but, you know, it's like the best of both worlds, all right? And God got a hold of my life at that conference center because of that pastor who believed in me. And then some of us have coworkers or bosses that have become unforgettable. I mean, you only need to be around me about 10 or 15 minutes before I get into how Chuck Swindoll has influenced my life in such a major way as the mentor in my life. And I thank God every day for that guy. I'm so grateful that he hired me and built into my life. But there's one group I've kind of skirted around, and many would say you can make your strongest case for becoming unforgettable in this category. And that's mom and dad. And some of us say with a twisted stomach, oh yeah, my parents are unforgettable. But my therapist says if I keep working hard and come every week, that somehow I can work it through and get past the unforgettable pain of my mother and my father, okay? And a lot of us have that. I understand that, and I don't mean to minimize that. But the older I get, the more I realize, you know what, there is good in everyone. And there's something that mom and dad passed on to us that is really, really significant. And so for a few minutes this morning, I thought it might be good if we looked at passing this along and moving from the unforgettable people in our life to the big question of the day: how can you be unforgettable in somebody else's life? How can you be the person that when you have passed on, you will always be remembered? That's your legacy. What kind of things can we be doing now to do that? So here's what we're going to do. We're going to look at a very familiar biblical passage, and the passage is specifically about parenting. But what I want us to do is to realize that these principles work. You know, to use a camera analogy, what I want to do is make those points and then pull the camera back and say, you know what? You can use these same kinds of principles to impact your small group. Those that are in your neighborhood or your extended home that you're living in now, your community, your small group at church, where your work, your coworkers, how to be unforgettable in all of these contexts. Deuteronomy 6, verses 4-9. At the edge of the entrance to the promised land, Moses says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons and shall talk about them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." If you would, if you're a note taker, just write down the two words, unforgettable people. And let me give you a couple, three ideas of what an unforgettable person looks like. A person who is going to impact somebody else in a major way. The first one comes from verse 7, and here's how I phrased it. Unforgettable people influence those around them formally and informally. Unforgettable people influence those around them formally and informally. Now, when you look at verse 7 in the English text, it looks like Moses is saying something in kind of a redundant manner. You will teach these to your diligently to your sons and talk of them. It sounds like teach and talk are kind of the same concept, but in the original, they're two very different concepts. Teach is the more formal of the two words. When I see that word teach, because I have a background in education, I think classroom, I think lecture, I think overhead projector, PowerPoint. I think, you know, fill in the blanks. I think read this book. A very formal kind of influence. The talk, the second term, is the more informal of the two. And if I were to give a more modern, updated definition of what talk really means, it's the phrase I hear my kids say all the time, just doing life together, just sharing life. So there's two very different commands here by Moses. If you want to impact somebody, you want to teach them, you want to be a more formal kind of, let's have a heart-to-heart discussion about some really important things, and you also want to hang out. Think back to, your parents or how you raised your kids. I mean, you probably fall into one category or another. I love those parents that were the kind that would kind of tap on the door 20 minutes before dinner. Dinner's in 20 minutes. Don't forget to bring your notebook. We're going through some things. You know, and that's updated too. There'll be a PowerPoint presentation. We'll be filling in the blanks, and nobody gets dessert until everybody's got this thing figured out, right? That kind of mom or that kind of dad. There are not that many of them. They're in the minority in today's world. But there are parents that were like that, very good about, well, tonight's dinner, we're in the third of a 12-part series. And it's like, holy mackerel, I just wanted some meatloaf, and I'm getting, hermeneutics here, all right? But that's a very important part, formal teaching. The informal part is not so much let's get something established through a lecture over dinner, but hey, after dinner, let's go out to the driveway and shoot hoops for 45 minutes. It's interesting. One of the ghostwriting projects I had required me to talk to men about their relationship with their dads. And one of the questions was, what's your favorite memory with your dad? And the top answer, if you ever get on Family Feud and I'm writing this script, the top answer, favorite memory with my dad, going to a ball game. And I got to where I started to figure this out, and I said, and I would facetiously say, oh, yeah, the conversations the two of you must have had? He said, what? We never spoke. There were no words spoken. I mean, there was an occasional, that's a lousy call, but we never talked with one another. But it was just living life together. I mentioned my best day with my dad somewhere along the line this week, and I don't think we ever said a word the whole time we were there, but it was the most significant day of my life when my dad took me to work with him. It hasn't always been that way. I mean, in today's world, most of us want to be an influencer by more of the let's just hang out. There aren't a lot of formal teachers anymore. But I remember when I was a young dad, I picked up a book that was very helpful to me in my parenting by a guy that's become a good friend, Gordon MacDonald, and the book was called The Effective Father. It's the first time I had ever read this story, and it was really impactful. It's about James Boswell, who's not here anymore. He lived a lot longer ago, several hundred years ago. The famous biographer of Samuel Johnson referred to a special day in his childhood when his father took him fishing. After having heard this experience so often, it occurred to someone much later to check the journal of Boswell's father and determine what he said about the fishing trip. From his perspective, from the parental perspective, turning to the date, the reader found only one sentence entered by Boswell's father: "Gone fishing today with my son, a day wasted." See, in that world, doing life together seemed irrelevant. That wasn't important. It was, but be sure you're at dinner where we're going to have the eighth of 19 lectures on deportment. And they were really into that. And what I guess what I'm trying to get us to understand is it's kind of in our personality that we kind of lean one way as opposed to the other. So where this gets to be a challenge for me is I don't see Moses as offering this as multiple choice. You can either do A or you can do B. What he's doing, rather, is saying two sides of a same coin. That a real, unforgettable person influences those around formally and informally. And so if you are by nature more of a let's hang out kind of person, you need to make yourself a little note. I got to get out of my comfort zone. I got to get out of my box a little bit. And I've got to become a little bit more instructive. How many parents who are of that mode don't think back and say, man, I wished I had had a more frank discussion with my kid about this. Or I wished I had ever thought about, you know, and then just the opposite. If you're a big, you know, lecturer, you hear, oh, most people say going to a ball game together. I don't know that I ever took my kid to a ball. There are people I hear like that all the time. You know, I love my dad, but my dad didn't take me to ball games. My dad took me to two Phillies games, and it was only because I was playing Little League, and the whole Little League went, and the Little League, who was still just incredibly budget conscious, took us to two exhibition games that didn't even count. So I'm getting to see the Phillies, actually the bench, because they're playing all the bench people during the exhibition games. Didn't get to see my hero, number six, Johnny Callison, which you all know and love now. I know you've all been Googling him for the last 24 hours, but anyway, unforgettable people influence those around them, formally and informally. Second, unforgettable people are intentional and take their job seriously. They are intentional and they take their job seriously. In the middle of verse 7, it says, teach them, actually right up front, teach them diligently. That's the word I'm drawing this point from. The Hebrew word literally means to sharpen. It's talking about this is something you really need to work at. And in our culture, I don't know, we just have this, and I see this even more in my kids' generation. It's just people aren't intentional like they used to be. I want to be unforgettable, so I'm really hoping I luck out and it happens. I really want to influence people, so I'm hoping by some amazing coincidence that happens. No. It's saying, I want to be unforgettable, so I'm going to work specifically at that. That if I want my kids to remember me in a positive way, I got to build into their life positively. And if I haven't done that up to this point, it's not too late. I can still, you know, I don't know what happens to Dad, but he's gotten all positive all of a sudden. You reading the emails? Does Dad have a drug habit? We should call the doctor and find out what medication he's on. It's making him happy. And then they realize this, it's just wherever you are. The whole idea is I want to intentionally impact them in a very positive way. Diligently, take it seriously. Yesterday when I told you the story of working at Insight for Living and having that football pole and coming home, and my kids were saying, well, wait a minute, we want to have that kind of fun as well. That is also an illustration of taking it seriously, because whenever I make a point like this about getting focused, getting intentional, take it seriously, I hear little voices in my head. I know I need to see somebody about that, but I hear little voices in my head, and they're my kids, and they're not adults, they're little kids. And it's my kids still saying, come on, Dad, you're no fun. Come on, Dad, lighten up. Come on, Dad, get a clue. Because maybe it's just me, but when I get exhorted to be serious and take this, I lose all the joy. It's like, this is a task. We have to do this. I want to influence you in an unforgettable way. This will hurt, but we will get through it. What kind of influence is that? What kind of legacy is that to leave? And that's why the football bowl was so much fun and continues to be so much fun. It is a very focused, intentional way to influence all of my family with a lot of fun. I mean, I get murdered in these football polls. I have had my name on the plaque a couple of years, but again, we've been doing it for 30 years now, so I mean, come on. But it's just, it doesn't have to take away the joy just because we're getting really, really serious about it. There's somebody, if they're still here, that was here this week that came up and said, hey, you know, I heard you talk about that football poll a couple years ago. I just wanted to let you know our family is doing it, and I love them. I'm not sure I'm going to get this exactly right, but instead of a perpetual plaque, he went to the trophy store to get a perpetual plaque, and the trophy salesman sold him a real live trophy, and what's sitting on the top is an old guy in a recliner. That is great, man. I got to get one of those to go along with the plaque, man. That is terrific. You know, and don't you think that creates a smile when you have a trophy of an old man sitting in a recliner all year because you won the family football poll? And then I told him another guy had told me from another place where I'd done this before that he did it with his family, just in case you're a diehard sports fan, I'm trying to give you some greater suggestions. He went out, and instead of buying a plaque, because he always wanted one of these, so he decided he was going to, you know, just do it for his own family. He's a big guy. He lived in Seattle. He's a big Seattle Seahawks football fan. He went out and bought a real live Seattle Seahawks helmet. And if you win, you get a Sharpie pen, and you get to autograph the helmet, and then you get to keep the helmet for a year. And then if you lose, you got to give it to whoever else is going to win, and they autograph. Now, I mean, really, where are you going to find that in Deuteronomy? I mean, I know I'm going far afield here, but I've been trying so hard all week because Earl's been so amazingly clear and pure to the text. I'm not trying to add to the text, and I'm not trying to violate the text. I'm just saying, if you're like me, you want some practical, okay, I know this, but now how do I do it? Give me a little help here, blonde boy, okay? So that's the idea of I can be intentional, I can be focused, but it's still something that I can really, really enjoy. Okay, let me give you one more, and then I'll wrap it up. Number three, unforgettable people model consistency. They model consistency. That's the whole thing of that you are teaching when you sit in the house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. So most of us are familiar with that. So I'm going to give you another one. You got that. That's the classic portion of the text, that you do it at every point, not only when you're outside in front of other people schmoozing, hey, how you doing, but when you're inside alone with them. Not only in the morning, but in the evening. This gets more convicting the older I get, because, you know, that means I can no longer hide behind the excuse of, I'm a morning person. You can't bust my chops for what I do at night. I mean, I should have been in bed 2 hours ago, and now you're, you know, it's saying, no, no, no. When you rise up and when you lie down, okay? And of course, if you're like me, as you get older, I'm not a morning person or an evening person anymore. I got like a couple of good hours around lunch and that's it. And then I need a nap. But anyway, let me give you one. This will be the last one because I've run out of material, okay? And I've almost run out of time. Number four, Unforgettable people focus on God's word for success in thoughts and actions. That's a long point. Let me say it again. Unforgettable people focus on God's word for success in thoughts and actions. Verse 8, you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. If you're unfamiliar with this text, that's usually where it starts to throw you. Wait a minute, frontals? What are frontals? What's this going on with the wrist and the forehead? Orthodox Jews to this day still use these. They call them phylacteries. It's a very wonderfully rich, symbolic idea. Again, an abstract concept taught through a concrete symbol. Frontals or phylacteries are little leather pouches, and you tie them around your wrist, kind of like where we would wear our watch, and then you would tie one around your forehead, kind of like where we would wear a sweatband if we were working out. And inside of these little leather pouches is simply a portion of Scripture. And the symbolism is, oh dear God, can you take this holy word of yours and pound it through my skull so that it affects what I think about in my brain? May I think godly thoughts. And may I participate in godly actions as the verses move through my wrist to my hands so that my actions are godly as well. Somebody let that bird in. I love that. I love that. That if I can communicate to the people I want to be unforgettable with, that it's all bottom-lined in how you respond to this book, then I've accomplished my job. And I came to the realization 4 years ago that I really hadn't done a very good job of that with my five kids. And it was very hard for me to process that because the rationalization that I used just made it even worse. I found myself thinking, well, you know, I was never really one of those sit down and have the lecture, have the talk with my kids. I was the let's hang out and shoot hoops kind of dad. And my rationalization was, well, you know, they travel with me and this is what I do. I do this for a living. So if they want to know how I feel about being unforgettable, they'll be right there on the front row listening to me. And I began to realize, you know, whenever they had the opportunity not to be on that front row, they weren't. So Lord knows what was going on when they were sitting on that front row. In other words, I was hoping that they were getting what I was saying, what I wanted to say to them directly through a group presentation. And when I fully processed this, I mean, I was crushed. It just broke my heart to think that I had all this wonderful time and opportunity to work all this stuff in with my kids, and I just didn't do it. My devotional life was secret. My giving was secret. Everything was private, and I realized that's exactly the way my father was. I mean, to this day, I have no idea how much my father made working on the railroad because I can't find any records of it, and he dare never speak of it. I did the same thing. So 4 years ago, and there was nothing magic that happened 4 years ago. It was just a realization. I went, you know what? It's never too late. It's never too late. It's never too late. So 4 years ago, for Christmas, every one of my adult kids and their spouses got a special Christmas present from Pop-Pop. It was a year-long daily devotional. Oswald Chambers, My Utmost for His Highest. Okay? I'm old. I knew Oswald personally. I dated his sister briefly, but and I knew they would struggle with the language a little bit, but what I really liked about it was the version that had the reading, and then it had like little notes or lines on the side to take notes, to journal. I said, every one of you is going to get one of these, and here's what we're going to do. We're all going to read it together as a family. Well, the eyes are rolling, and oh yeah, Dad, I'll be all over that, right? And I said, and here's my promise to you. I'm going to read it every day, and then I'm going to send you an email every morning with what I wrote on the side so that you can see how I'm processing this. And they're there, okay, Dad, that's great, thank you. Yeah. And it went over, you know, it didn't. It just, you know, my kids are at all different levels. Some of the kids thought that was really cool. Others thought, no, brother, what a waste. So I started doing this email every day, and I would kind of set up the devotional part with just a little newsy news. Hi, I'm at Mount Hermon. We're having a great time. You know, almost like a postcard kind of thing. And I found out that not too many of them were reading Oswald Chambers, but they read my email every morning. So I'm into it. So the second year, I found a devotional, 365-day devotional that Henry Blackaby wrote off of his great book, Experiencing God. So everybody got an Experiencing God devotional that Christmas. And a little less eye-rolling, but still some eye-rolling. And we did the whole same deal the second year. And then this year, I found one of my all-time favorite writers, Max Lucado, has a devotional called Grace for the Moment. And again, I brought it with because I just want you to see. I'm not talking about investing 3 hours. It's like a paragraph or two and then like three or four lines for you to write in. So I'm figuring it takes about 20 minutes to do. And I send this, I gave it to him and I send this email off every day. So to me, this has become a real delight and a real pleasure. I mean, the only challenge for me is making sure I'm always in a place where I have email access or internet access. And as long as I can get an email off to them every day, I do it. And God's been good. I've not missed a day in 3 years. And I could probably count on one hand how many responses I've gotten, but I know they're reading and they're processing. And I feel so much better about, you know what, I still have an opportunity to build into their lives in a more formal sense. So wherever you are today, wherever you are today, it's never too late. I don't care if the kids live in Africa, Canada, São Paulo, it doesn't make any difference. It's never too late. You can continue to connect with them and create your legacy and be unforgettable. Let's pray. Lord, inspire us with those words. Thank you for inspiring Moses to say what he said in Deuteronomy 6 and helping us see how significant our life can be. Lord, I pray for each and every person here that not in an ego way, not in a pride way, but in a godly mentoring and discipling way, would you make us all unforgettable. For your honor, and for your glory. Amen.